Here.
Do you have a quorum?
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Special order of business tonight. Madam Manager, anything?
Nothing, thank you.
Thank you. And approval of minutes for August 19th. Mr. Keel?
Just minor technical correction, Mr. Mayor. On page 6, there's a sentence missing a verb in the first full paragraph. It should say "and asked" what that referred to at the end. That's all.
Okay. Are there any other corrections to the...
They're extremely small and picky. I could just send them to Lori.
Yeah, if they're just the word...
It's a he to a her and a...
Yeah, just send them to
him. Is included in a way instead of were. That's
Madam English teacher, just send them in for us, please.
I will. Thank you.
Are there any other corrections to the minutes for August 19, 2013? Are there any objections to their approval? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you, everybody. Manager's request for agenda changes?
None, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Public participation on non-agenda items. We just had one person sign up back there, Lori.
Okay.
Sir, if you wish, if you'd come up and you can take the immediate seat.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you very much.
Good. Let me get my sheet first. And all right, we have one person signed up for a public comment, and is this on?
I was just filling it out as you called me up.
Okay. Mr. Gene Randall?
Yes.
Name and rank and serial number?
My name is Gene Randall. I've been a Juneau resident for 32 years. The last 15 years, I've resided at 11346 North Douglas Highway. I'm here before you tonight to give kudos to the Community Development Department. I want to express my appreciation for their quick response to concerns voiced by citizens on North Douglas Highway. Recently, a cell tower was built on Spoon Island, and part of that cell tower was a flashing strobe light, which we were not aware was going to happen. The strobe light was very, very bright and very, very intrusive, and we began calling Community Development Department officials actually on Friday night, which I'm sure was very inappropriate, but it did work. We also responded by emails this morning and direct communication by telephone with the Community Development Department, and they have given us a satisfactory response, and that is that the strobe light has been flashing all weekend was not a direct part of the plan. And they are taking efforts and steps to rectify the measure. The conditional use permit that was granted for it incorporated a red light at night, not a bright flashing strobe light at night, which was our primary concern. And that's the primary reason I'm here, is to thank them. But also, I want to express a concern that in the process of public notice for this conditional use permit, the Community Development Department followed the letter of the law and notified residents within a certain range, a very limited range, I believe 500 feet of the proposed tower, which really didn't apply to any residents at all. But they graciously did extend that public comment to people to within a mile, which included Smuggler's Cove, for example. However, my subdivision at Entrance Point Cove is directly across from this flashing strobe light. We are 1.5 miles from the light, but it is directly in all of our living room and bedroom windows. I'm here to request that in the future that a common sense approach be used for public comment notification. And that in the case where there's a bright light or something that can be seen at a very great distance, that people, not anybody that can see the light, but especially people that are the most close to a very, very bright light be notified. I have, just for your viewing purposes, a map, for example, showing where the light is and my housing development on North Douglas Highway. And I've highlighted where the light is, and if you would pass that down, where our housing is on North Douglas. We are right near the boat ramp, and we look directly at the light. Mm-hmm. And so my request is that in the future they consider a common sense approach to public notice, not just within the letter of the law of 500 feet, but to consider other residents of Juneau. And that's what I have for you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Randall? Someday maybe we'll have it in our cell tower ordinance.
If there is to be one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Randall. Appreciate it. And I'm sure community development appreciates the thank you. Okay, public. Is there anybody else who wishes to make public comment? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Are there any members of the public who request consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing none, are there any requests for consent agenda changes from the assembly? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to have resolution 2661 pulled from the consent agenda, please.
Okay, anything else? Assembly action? Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Wait a minute. For what? Go ahead and come on up here to the mic. First.
Sorry.
Okay. My husband just spoke. My name is Sue Ann Randall. I live at 11346 North Douglas Highway.
Just a minute. Let me make sure it's okay with the rest of the assembly members that you speak.
Sorry.
Is that all right if we break the rules here and let Ms. Randall speak, probably on the same topic?
It is.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry that
I'm
late
okay.
with grandchildren.
Yep.
I lived there for 39 years. And let's see. I would also like to applaud people for their prompt attention addressing the Spoon Island cell tower after we alerted them to the problem. Hopefully the light will be turned off tonight. So I'm speaking here tonight as a matter of public record to notify you that the experience this past weekend with the cell tower strobe light has illuminated some concerns that I have regarding possible inattention to details, and mainly it has to do with public notice, and my husband did mention that. But in my conversation today with Terry, she told me that public notice had been extended more than needed to be, and that they had gone so far as to post a sign at the end of Prince Cove Road and at the boat launch. Also, they sent letters to the residents of Smuggler's Cove. So my question is, we have like 8, I think, neighbors in our cove right between Fish Creek and the boat launch. And if there was enough attention to post a sign at the boat launch, which I don't use the boat launch, although I live right there, if there was enough concern to post a sign at the boat launch, then I'm curious why we didn't also receive letters notifying us so that we could provide public comment about the cell tower and concerns that any of us might have had at that time. That just seems a little funny to me. So within my research just since finding out even about the existence of the cell tower about 11 days ago. There's a few other things that seem a little funny to me. And so tonight I want to go on public record that I'm going to put something together and send it to everyone here, just to show you what I find out and what my concerns are, and that's pretty much it. And I thank you for your time.
And so, Ms. Randall, I would appreciate it if you would not only send it to us, but the people who are going to take action is the city manager and her staff. And so if you would include her...
Yes,
in
and
the record,
thank you. I sent you a message this morning, so I'm sure you had a hand in repairing.
Are there any questions for Ms. Randall?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, public comment is closed.
For sure.
And we'll move forward. Where were we at?
We're at the consent agenda.
Okay. You have something you want to change too, or are you going to move?
No, I'm going to make a motion.
Okay, go ahead, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we adopt the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
With the, excuse me.
Thank you. He's my person, you know.
Right.
with the removal of 2661 and then ask for unanimous consent. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wong.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, resolution 2661, please.
No objection.
Oh, I'm sorry. But is there any objection to accepting the consent agenda with the 2661 poll? Hearing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk.
A resolution requesting the Alaska Marine Highway System to maintain core service levels to include one Prince Rupert vessel year-round and two vessels May through September.
Thank you. Comments, Mr. Jones?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. maybe just sort of nitpicky, but the one, two, three, four, five, the sixth whereas, I just found it sort of odd that the municipality, city and borough of Juneau, would be asking the Marine Highway System to consider reducing its budget. I can understand saying if you have to make budget reductions or if there are changes in resources, we'd like you to consider the following as a priority for those resources. But the way this read to me, and then over on the last couple of sentences on the next page, I just found it odd that the city and borough general was asking the Alaska Marine Highway System to reduce their budget. That's the way it read to me.
Yeah.
And I understand the budget constraints, but I just, there ought to be a better wording about asking them to look for additional resources.
Yeah, and I guess that what it basically meant, but this came from Petersburg, their resolution, and also from, Sitka's resolution, and also Southeast Conference resolution, and Petersburg had a hand with a letter in on it. And they just wanted to make sure that DOT knew that we didn't want, as a whole in the region, cut core services. We wanted to keep a core service, whatever that level is. And if they have to cut, like they're short $3 million or something in DOT's budget for Alaska Marine Highway System, then that money come from somewhere else, not the core service attempt.
I understood that, but the way it reads is, whereas the Alaska Marine Highway System should consider reducing its budget by rescheduling vessels, just to me appeared to be the wrong approach for the city and borough to be talking to state government.
Does anybody else have an objection to that? Does it get the point across or not? Do you have an other wording, Mr. Jones?
No, I didn't.
Would you like it better if we maybe crossed that whereas off?
I think so, and because I think the section one basically gets to the same point.
Okay.
Without the last whereas.
If you would make that as a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we amend resolution serial number 2661. In removing the sixth whereas the Alaska Marine Highway should consider reducing its budget, I would ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? So ordered. Did you have anything else, Mr. Jones?
No, Mr. Mayor, and I would move that that we approve the amended resolution serial 2661 and ask unanimous consent.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there any objections to that? Thank you very much. Resolution 2661 is adopted. And just to make a little statement here about this, the other parts of the region truly wish to say thank you to the City and Borough of Juneau for showing support for the Alaska Marine Highway, because we usually stay neutral on it and don't put our best foot forward. This shows the rest of our region that we are concerned about the Alaska Marine Highway system, that it is part of our highway system, and they truly appreciate that. Everybody that I've talked to has kind of had a little bit of a shock that the City and Borough of Juneau would even take it up and discuss it. So thank you to all of you for doing that. Okay, we'll move on to the first order of business under public hearing. And Madam Clerk, would you read Ordinance 2013-21B?
An ordinance amending the Bear Attraction Nuisance Code.
Thank you. Madam Kiefer?
This proposed ordinance would amend the Bear Attraction Nuisance Code in Title 36. It states that a container that has been violated by bears three or more times in a 30-day period is a bear attraction nuisance. This ordinance was reviewed by the Assembly Committee of the Whole on August 26, 2013. Version B that's before you tonight makes the following minor changes. Changes the wording either by design or improper use to whether due to design or improper use, and a small revision to more clearly provide that violators can be ticketed for separate instances occurring on the same day. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move on to assembly action. Madam Crane?
I move adoption of Ordinance 2013-21B and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Mr. Jones?
Just an objection for a question.
Go ahead.
On page 2, line 21, what is the word P-U-T-R-E-S-C-I-B-L-E?
Putrescible.
I've never heard that word before.
That was in the ordinance as it originally existed. That was not changed, so that's what was adopted previously.
It means
putrid. It's garbage.
It means putrid.
Well, putrid.
Capable
okay.
Of becoming putrid. Thank you.
Then I remove my objection. I should have got my dictionary out first.
Stinky material. Okay. Are there any other questions? Is there any objection?
Mr. Mayor, I object.
All right, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Yes. Mayor. I object to pretty much for the same reasons I stated before when this came before us.
Mr. Nankervis, are you still with us? So you hit the wrong button again.
Sorry.
Let's try to turn them louder.
Oh, you did it?
I don't know. I was turning the volume up.
I think so.
Mr. Nankervis, go ahead. We have you loud and clear now.
Yeah, thanks. I think my phone objected to my objection. I'm not sure that.
I know how to control the meeting.
Anyway, oh, that was you. Thank you. Well, I, for the same reasons I said before, a number of things, I'm concerned that we're making criminals instead of infractions. I think the state of Alaska has options for bear baiting. Under the brown shirts, they have options to deal with what would be considered bear baiting. I think there's already plenty of precedent set for making this an infraction rather than making people criminals for this sort of stuff. And again, I don't necessarily have any objection to the current proposed language changes. I have objection to the ordinance as originally written, but it wasn't before me when it was originally written. It is now, and as I stated before, I'm going to look at the whole ordinance, not just the changes to the ordinance. As an example, if you look at page 2, line 25, it says soiled disposable diapers, that those are considered a bear attraction nuisance. But if you look at page 3, under line 4, it says exceptions are manure or sewage. And I think you could argue that soiled disposable diapers could be considered manure or sewage, depending on what you want to label those two things. So for those reasons and the ones I've stated before, I just don't like the ordinance as proposed. I think we're punishing people, and perhaps we're not doing it correctly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Are there any other comments? Hearing none, Madam Clerk, will you take the roll, please?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask. Your objections still stand, Mr. Nankervis?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please take the roll.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Dibdow?
Yeah.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, everybody. We'll move on to serial number 2013-21B has been adopted by the Assembly. We'll move on, Madam Clerk, to ordinance 2013-22.
An ordinance amending the official zoning map of the City and Borough to change the zoning of Tract B to USS 1796, 17.9 acres, and Tract B Blueberry Acres, 3.64 acres, located near the intersection of the Mendenhall Loop Road and Montana Creek Road, currently zoned D3 to D5.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager, admin report.
The 2008 Comprehensive Plan supports compact development to increase efficient land use in areas that are served by public water and sewer, adjacent to transit corridors, and located within the urban service area boundary. This rezone is consistent with the Comprehensive Plan. The Planning Commission reviewed this ordinance at its May 14, 2013 meeting and recommended forwarding it to the full Assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Public comment? Does anybody from the public wish to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move on to Assembly action. Madam Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2013-22 and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. 2013-22 has been adopted. Madam Manager, I see no unfinished business tonight.
Correct.
How can that be? New business. Contract amendments for PN&D engineers to perform design through bid services for Stater Harbor Master Plan. We just asked for orders of the day here? Or do we approve the...
takes approval.
Do you approve it?
I would approve it.
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the Assembly approve the contract amendment for P&D engineers to perform the design through bid services for Stater Harbor Master Plan Phase 2 and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections?
Or a question, Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I noticed that this fee proposal before us is split up into, I think, five separate tasks, four of which are bid on a fixed fee basis, the first of which is proposed on a time and expenses basis. And I wondered if there was someone who could brief us on why that distinction was important for what is supposedly the least expensive of the five tasks, and maybe how sharp the pencils are here.
Madam Manager?
And I would ask Mr. Yucatel to please come up to answer that question.
Welcome, Mr. Yucatel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would answer in this manner that the Planning Commission approved a conditional use permit, and I think associated with that approval was an expectation that Docks and Harbors would work shoulder to shoulder with the community to ensure that what is built is meets the vision of the community. So for that portion, for the early portion of the design, I expect a lot of public meetings, public hearings to meet with, for example, members of the condominium association so that we are building something that will receive community-wide support.
Mr. Keel, anything else?
Just sort of to drill down a little further, I mean, I don't have experience or expertise with how many hours of a senior engineer 7 and how many hours of a designer 5 are going to be needed for those kind of meetings. Can you just talk to us briefly about how closely Docks and Harbors analyzed the time and expenses estimate here for this that particular phase? Did we get out the sharp pencil and the X-Acto knife, or are we kind of ballparking it?
Well, the time and expense is essentially, you will have a meeting, depending on what prep work is required, the number of meetings that we actually hold, that will set that amount. So it could be presumably less, you know, not to exceed, although it is a time and expense line item. But there's just, I can't give you a clear answer today based on what kind of public input we'll have on the initial stages of the project. You know, there might be expectation that we go back and redo a lot of vegetation, or there might be more studies that are requested of Docks and Harbors. So it's very much an unknown line item.
That's what makes me nervous, yeah.
Anybody else? Any other questions? Wishes of the assembly?
Mr. Mayor, maybe just a process question. Since I noticed, as I look at this, that it says the contractor won't exceed that time and expenses estimate without prior written approval. What's the process for Docks and Harbors approving that, should it need to exceed that estimate on phase one, or task one, excuse me? Does that presumably doesn't come back to the assembly. Does that come to the Docks and Harbors board? Who makes that determination?
Anything over $100,000 requires requires assembly approval. So presumably, and what I've told the my Docks and Harbors board is that I will keep them appraised of cost increases and would seek their approval for line items greater than $25,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will remove my objection.
Thank you very much. Is there any objections to moving forward with contract amendment for BNND engineers at Stetter Harbor? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll move forward with the next one. Mr. Jones?
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we approve the consultant contract amendment for P&D engineers to perform construction administration and inspection services for cruise ship terminal staging area improvements phase two and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. And then the next is late file senior citizen hardship property tax exemptions. Madam Manager.
Martin Johnson and Joel Orlov applied late for the senior citizen real property hardship exemption. The code places the authority for accepting late filed claims with the assembly. Mr. and Mrs. Johnson stated they do not drive and that they were late filing because they needed to wait on their friend to transport them to the post office. Mr. Johnson has received the exemption in the past. Mr. Orlov is late filing due to medical reasons. He has also received the exemption in the past. The assessor's office has reviewed the applications and determined that both filers have income ratio that would qualify them for the exemption if it had been filed in a timely manner. I recommend the assembly authorize the assessor to accept the applications as if timely filed.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Wishes of the assembly? Mr. Wanamaker?
The move staff recommendation and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Staff reports. Arcapella Lot 3 property acquisition.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Watt to please come forward and update you on an acquisition that we discussed with you last month.
Mr. Watt. Name, rank, and serial number.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Rory Watt, Engineering Director. This is just an update on the archipelago, the small lot, Lot 3, I think, is what it became in the new survey. And the property owner agreed to sell at the value that we discussed. So we can proceed with that purchase for approximately $298,000, and we'll move forward on that.
Okay. Is the rest of that all squared away now, too?
Everything else is squared away.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mr. Watt on this property? Thank you, Mr. Watt.
Thank you.
And next, we have General Police Department annual report.
Yes, and I'd like to invite up Chief Johnson and whomever else you would like to have come up, knowing that we only have one mic. Okay.
And it's fun to ask for name, rank, and serial number on this one.
Lieutenant Self.
Giving up his seat. Oh,
wait,
I don't fit. Okay,
all right. Don't get hung up on your gun.
Oh, those
gun belts, they...
it's just the gear.
They make it hard to sit down.
Thank you for saying that, Chief. There. Okay.
It was great when we had easels and flip charts, and we just kind of wrote stuff down as we went.
This one will scroll you through. Oh, you need it on there. Sorry, one more time. Okay. Sorry, Jerry.
Rank serial number?
No,
Bryce,
no.
Bryce Johnson, Chief, and I am very proud of my 180 serial number, badge number 180.
All right.
I'm very excited. I think
it's
I got
good to have you and your staff here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, Assembly members. Thank you for having us here today. I'm going to present the 2013 Juneau Police Department annual report. This report will cover the 2012 calendar year. The Juneau Police Department's undergone a tremendous amount of change in the past year. Chief Browning, Assistant Chief Decker, Cindy Brown Mills, they all left for different assignments or retired. I got here about 3 months ago, and I worked at an agency for over 20 years. Where I was at, there were 20 other police agencies that all kind of worked in the same area, and I got to know all of them pretty well. I got to see all of their inner workings and interact with a lot of different police departments. As we were considering moving, I looked at a lot of different police organizations, and I researched them, and I tried to do a lot of homework. So what I'm going to say, I say with a certain amount of expertise, the Juneau Police Department is a fantastic police organization. It is filled with dedicated professionals who really provide quality public service. The JPD processes, the policies, the procedures, they set a standard and an example that other police departments around the country can really look to and can emulate. We recognize that we can always, and we will in all cases, try to innovate, try to do better, and try to improve the things we do. But the police department that I inherited from Chief Browning, it was a great police department, and I'd like to just acknowledge Chief Browning and all the people that went before for the great officers that I found out at the Juneau Police Department, for the great department that I inherited from them. During this reporting year, we had several promotions. Sergeant Dave Campbell was promoted from sergeant to lieutenant, and he took over command of the patrol division and provided great leadership there. Chris Gifford was promoted to sergeant, and he provides leadership for a patrol team. Detective Craig Campbell was promoted to master officer, which is quite an accomplishment. The master officer program is for police officers who have at least 8 years experience and have not promoted and maybe do not desire to promote to sergeant. The program is designed to recognize those senior officers who pursue professional excellence in work assignments. They pursue educational goals. They're physically fit. Detective Campbell, I don't know if you've met him, he is the most physically fit police officer I've seen in quite a long time. And Detective Campbell is the first JPD officer to earn the rank of Master Police Officer, and we are really quite proud of him. The most important resource of any organization, any department, is its people, and we've added numerous people during this last year. Officer Keith Byrne came to us from Ireland. Officer Cody Held came to us from Florida. Officer Michael Wise returned to us from Hawaii. Officer Steve Scher came to us from Petersburg. Officer Jeff Brink came back to us after spending some time with the state of Alaska and returned to his true family at JPD. Records Supervisor Deborah Rathbone, Records Clerk Brian Ewell, Dispatcher Joseph Fox, Dispatcher Alicia Sell, and Community Service Officer Sarah Dolan have all started with us or moved to a new position on our team. And our people at JPD really are our greatest asset. We're now going to take a look at a statistical report of crime rates and trends for the city and borough of Juneau. I'm happy to report that the general crime trend is that crime is going down. Crime rates, they vary for a variety of reasons. They can be attached to the age of the population, educational endeavors, the families, the amount of drug enforcement and drug trafficking, employment rates. They get attached to a lot of different things. They also get attached to community efforts, community-oriented policing efforts, how we partner with the community. And so this is truly a shared community achievement that the crime rates are going down. And the Juneau Police Department is very proud to play our part in this community effort to drive down these crime rates. Lieutenant Chris Sell, who heads up our Special Operations Division, she put together this annual report and kind of coordinated the statistical part of it, so she's going to talk to the statistics of it. Lieutenant Sell.
Thank you. My name is Chris Sell, for the record, first name Chris, and my serial number is 115. So I try not to think about the 65 slots that exist between my serial number and the new chief. Also in the room, we have some even lower serial numbers. Lieutenant Scott Erickson is here. Lieutenant David Campbell, we've got Deputy Chief Ed Mercer. I'd like to thank our crime analyst, Dee Ozyard, for coming down, along with our evidence custodian that we let out of that little room to come down here and be with us, and Aaron Calwar, who is our new supervisor in the communications unit. So we're all here to kind of show our support and answer any questions. So to go into my part of the report, I was given the assignment to assemble this year's annual report. It was my honor to do so, and it's always fun to share good news that crime is down, that we've had about a 20% decrease in total crime reported. We don't kid ourselves that reported crime is the only crime going on, because we do know there are times crime is not reported for a variety of reasons, but there is some good news to be found in the decrease of reported crimes. If you go to our next slide, we've had same rate of a decrease in arrests. So we are still out there actively enforcing the crime. Arrests have decreased only 9%. As we also have changed our procedures in an attempt to arrest people who are committing more of the crimes. So the more active burglars, the people engaged in more active car riflings, are the people that we're really focusing on and continuing to arrest those people. We've had a 7.6 decrease in calls for service, which is now we're getting into some fairly small percentages. You can see some ebbs and flows in our regular activities. So we don't necessarily tie the small adjustments to any particular factor. We have a 5.6 decrease in traffic stops. This I would also place in that same category of kind of an ebb and flow we're seeing in our numbers. In 2010, we started counting our traffic stops. That caused what is known as the Westinghouse phenomenon. You're probably familiar with that. Once you start looking at something, it changes. So we started looking at our traffic stops and encouraging people with their numbers. And so we saw a big increase in traffic stops in 2010, and now we're seeing small adjustments to that number, but the kind of adjustments that could be due to one or two officers' activities. So next we go into a slide I'd like to linger over because it makes me very happy, and this is an almost 30% increase in drug seizures. I'm honored to be part of the unit that participates in these drug seizures, and this increase I believe has some ties to some really hard work we did with the Postal Service recently. That involved elected officials, it involved a number of meetings. We used to get postal inspections every 1 or 2 years. Postal inspectors would come into town. It had gotten to that level. And after we had a lot of conversations, now the postal inspectors are coming in roughly quarterly. Of course, I can't tell you the dates for obvious reasons. So we have seen great results from that. Now, the price of drugs has gone up. So I don't want to have you under any wrong impression. What we're seeing is that the street value is going up, but so are our seizures of amounts for some of the drugs. As you can tell, oxys are down. The drug companies changed some of their formulas, causing some of those drugs to deactivate if they're crushed, and people who are using them not as prescribed often crush them as part of that process. So oxys went down and were all but replaced and then outpaced by heroin, with a 9-fold increase in heroin. And I don't think there's very many families that have not been touched by Juno's heroin phenomenon, and it's something that we still need to put a lot of time and attention into. We've also seen an increase in meth roughly 10-fold, and our seizures accounted for $250,000 more worth of drugs being taken off the streets in 2012 as opposed to 2011. So while this is a mountain we're climbing, we're aware of it, and we consider this a very high priority because the people who are abusing drugs are also committing burglaries to pay for those. They're also committing assaults because of drug deaths and the various politics that goes on within that subculture in the community. So drug work is criminal work, and so that's how we treat it.
I kind of started this by talking about the tremendous amount of change that's occurred at the Juno Police Department. And since this annual report was put together, that pace of change has just continued right on. Aaron Calawara was promoted to manager of the Communications Center. The JPD command staff was reorganized. Ed Mercer was promoted to deputy chief over the police department. Scott Erickson was promoted to lieutenant, and he now commands and is leading the patrol division. We've added officers, dispatchers, records clerks. We're going to be taking over operations at the airport next month, and we're actively trying to recruit new police officers to cover those operations. We retooled our case flow management system to provide a better way of resolving cases. Our goal is to clear more cases and to do a better job of customer service to victims of crimes. The communication center has emerged from a period of distress and has functioned at a very, very high level. We're looking at partnering with the mental health community through the crisis intervention team to provide better services to individuals and families that are undergoing crises in their lives. We're looking to provide crime prevention through environmental design inspections for local businesses, both downtown and out in the other areas. We're striving to tap the innovation and creative potential of all our people, who are our greatest resource. Through all of this change, though, the mission of the Juno Police Department has remained the same. It was on each of these little slides I've been showing for a purpose. Our mission is, in partnership with the people of Juno, our mission is to make our city a place where people can live safely and without fear. In order to accomplish this mission, we will continue to be the professional police organization that we have always been. I hope you've noticed the four words in the top right corner of each of these slides: integrity, courage, respect, and service. Those are not just words to the Juneau Police Department. Those are the core values that we have adopted, that we will strive and insist that we live our lives and conduct our professional careers by those core values: integrity, courage, respect, and service. Looking to the future, our philosophy is that crime and public safety are community problems. The community and the police must work together to solve these problems. Citizens, JPD, community organizations, and governmental agencies are equally responsible to help fulfill this mission. Each entity must be willing to work together, to become involved, to take initiative, and to cooperate with each other to help make our city a place where people can live safely and without fear. Community policing is the heart of this direction and plan. Each member of JPD is responsible for achieving its mission, and the community shares in that same responsibility. As we look to the future, our vision is that JPD has a vision of how to accomplish the goals of the mission statement. The Juneau Police Department is united in the spirit of teamwork to be an open, courteous, and community-minded organization devoted to quality public service. We are dedicated to living by values reflecting a genuine desire to care for the safety and well-being of the public we serve, as well as the professionals who provide that service. These are exciting times at the Juneau Police Department. We're looking forward to a great future together. Does the Assembly have any questions about what we've accomplished over the past year as a community or as a department? Any questions about the annual report?
Thank you, Chief. Questions? Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your report. Besides the budget coming up, budget cycle, what's the greatest challenge you see facing the department?
Our greatest challenge is recruitment and retention. We have to add five spots for the airport, plus the spots that we're down in our regular staffing. We're striving in every manner possible to go out and find qualified people to be police officers. All the other things we would like to do, I would like to have another resource officer out there for the schools. There's a lot of things we would like to do that we are limited on doing because we have the authorized staffing from you, but we have not found the people to fill those positions yet. We have two people looking at retiring in the next little while. I believe we have eight people eligible for retirement over the next couple of years. And so recruitment and retention will be our biggest challenge, is having the dedicated professionals here to provide the service.
Mr. Smith?
Follow-up to that. It's my understanding the department over the past several years has really been able to excel in the area of obtaining retraining for its staff. Do you see that ability to continue? Do you see some constraints to maintaining that training level? What's that?
The training level that the officers have?
Yes.
I can tell you they train 96 hours a year, which is a industry leader. When I said that the Juneau Police Department's processes and standards were a model, they really are. We are looking at a lot of ways to maintain that training standard. We're looking at doing some block training where the officers would train for 40-hour blocks at the beginning of the year, and then we would do that during the winter months, and so we're not pulling them off of the street during the busier summer times. So we're looking at a lot of different ways we can maintain that same training standard. Training is incredibly important. I think we can maintain that same high value.
Any other questions? Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chief, it was mentioned that there's crime that's not reported. I was wondering what you could tell us about what types of crime are we most likely not to hear about, not reported. What are the reasons it's not reported, and what is that level in the community?
Most national studies, there's different ways you can look at crime. What we go through are our reported crime. Those are the crimes that get reported to the FBI. That's what we're looking at. There's another way to look at crime rates where you do victim surveys and you survey victims and say, have you been a victim of this crime? How often have you been a victim of this crime? Most studies that have done those comparisons will say that the actual reported crime rate is about half of what is actually going on. We don't capture about half of the crime that's going on out there. A lot of those crimes would be assaults. People will get in some sort of fight. They'll punch each other, but they just won't call and report it. Some of those crimes are thefts. If someone steals something from your yard and you, for whatever reason, think it's more difficult to call and make that report, and it's just not important enough to you to call and make that report, something gets taken out of your car, a lot of people don't report those type of thefts. There are some communities that are very tight-knit communities, and it's difficult for very tight-knit communities to report crime that occurs in that particular community. And so you have an underreporting in some minority communities as they fear to report the police. These are a lot of different reasons why the actual number of crimes happening will always be higher than what the reported crime rate is. What we do to try to bridge that gap is we go out to the community and we introduce ourselves to the community. We try to build that trust with the police department. The police department's only as good as the community will help us be. When it comes right down to it, there are not enough of us to keep everyone else from breaking the law. We rely on people choosing to be good law-abiding citizens on their own. And so we have to partner with the community, with the people that are being those good people, and have them trust us enough to report that crime and to direct us in their neighborhoods where the problems are. So it's really community-oriented policing that helps us bridge that gap between what's actually reported and what's actually going on.
Chief, if I may?
Yes.
Of course, one of my areas that I think a lot about having the detectives unit is the very serious crimes of sexual assault that are not reported. We know that they don't get reported, or victims can become uncooperative because they run into barriers, one of which is at the hospital not having enough nurses that can examine them and collect the evidence. Just Saturday night, many of us here were at a fundraiser to try and raise money for training those nurses. You can't expect a woman or man who's already been traumatized to wait at the hospital hour after hour after hour, not being able to eat, not being able to drink, awaiting professional service for their sexual assault examination. So we have some barriers. We've had some barriers from funding. We lost our licensed social worker at JPD that did support for domestic violence victims between the time of arrest and by the time we went to trial, because so often those victims become overwhelmed with having to meet their bills, take care of their children, find transportation, and sometimes find the lesser of the evils is to go back to an abuser rather than try and come up with the resources to overcome that. We've been talking with Amy Mead about now getting the city attorney's office involved with victims earlier, so maybe we can provide some support and try and fill that gap a little bit. So we know where some of our real problem areas are, and we're trying to at times take the too small bed sheet and make it fit. So we just keep pulling and trying to cover everything. So those are just a couple of the areas that we've recently made progress in, is with the SART nurses and with the city attorney's office and domestic violence victims.
All of this plays back to the philosophy I said. It has to be community-oriented policing. Community-oriented policing doesn't mean that we're the police. We're going to go out and we're going to find criminals, and we will find bad people. That's what we do, and we will take them to jail. That's our core function. But without partnering with these other community members, without partnering with the city prosecutor, without partnering with the nurses at the hospital, we can't do our job. We have to have other community members with us, and together we can make it better.
Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your report, and thank you for your efforts, especially toward trying to improve some of the things that are major issues in our community. Speaking of community, how do you feel, what has happened with our community people downtown, our two policemen who are doing the downtown? Have you noticed a decrease in problems, an increase in cooperation with people in town, especially the ones that we have some trouble with sometimes?
I think that it is a fantastic program. I met with the Downtown Business Association or Alliance mm-hmm. Association. I met with them. The first thing they asked me is, are you going to change anything with the downtown officers? I asked, well, how is it working? And they all of them to a person said it is working great. We see them all the time. We've noticed a marked difference in since they have been down there. And so in, I went and rode with Officer Mahoney. I watched what he did. He walked me through his day and what they do downtown. And the model that they are using, I think, is good. It's doing a fantastic job. It is making a difference. I do not intend to change that model. We will continue doing what they've been doing. The one thing we were going to try to add to that is the concept of crime prevention through environmental design. We're hoping it gets a little bit slower during the winter time, and the downtown officers will have a bit more time. They're going to be making contact with the businesses to kind of talk to them. Where do you place your inventory? Is it near the door? Is it away from the door? Where are your security cameras? How can we change the design of your store to make it less likely that a theft occurs or if there's any other safety issue? So we're hoping to do a little proactive crime prevention through that program. We've talked about that already, and that's planned to do during the wintertime.
Thank you. Follow-up, Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the chief, one of the things that I've noticed is that, and I appreciate the work that you do and the department does, and I also appreciate the fact that you're already overtaxed, and you're going to be taking on additional responsibilities here quite soon. But one of the things I've noticed in our community that just seems to be getting worse, and I mean really worse, is running red lights and four-way stops. And I'm not just talking about people in cars. I'm talking about buses, heavy-duty industrial trucks, city buses, school buses. They're running red lights that they could have stopped. And they're just, it's just getting worse. And I do a lot of walking out in the valley area, and when I see kids on their way to school and cars zooming past them when they're only partway across the street, you know, it's just a matter of time. And so I was wondering, are you planning on doing additional traffic stop type of work? Is this something that is on your list of things to take up again? What can you tell me about that?
We have already actively tried to be proactive about traffic safety. We ran a bicycle safety campaign about 3-4 weeks ago. It was a little embarrassing for me because I donned this kind of cowish looking shirt, and
it was my idea.
It was a great idea, but the goal was to get drivers aware of what was going on around them, have them looking and seeing. I think we made some pretty good inroads with that. It was really funny. It was about my first week here. I met with the Bar Association, and I was waiting for all sorts of legal questions about, you know, what are you going to do about searches? The first thing they said to me is, some guy almost ran me over when I was, I mean, they were so concerned about traffic. And I was like, wow, the Bar Association, they're really worried about traffic. We are actively looking at strategies that will allow our officers to spend more time doing traffic stops. One of the things we have to do is prioritize. And so if the officers are working on calls for service, if there is a domestic violence going on or something like that, they are unable to do traffic stops at that time. They do a really good job of making those traffic stops when they're not out taking calls for service. I would like to get to a time where I have dedicated people to say, you go enforce traffic. We are not there yet. I don't think we will be there really quick. But that is a function that I would like to get to where we are doing that, where we have dedicated traffic officers. In our, the Juneau Police Department did a survey a couple years ago. I don't know how long ago it was done. But the number one concern of the citizens was traffic. It was number one. It was over drugs. It was over everything else. And so I've heard the message loud that traffic is the number one concern. And so, yes, I've talked with Deputy Chief Ed Mercer repeatedly about how we could we could find a dedicated person to traffic. It's one of the first conversations we had, and we're looking at different ways of staffing, a lot of different ways to try to make it so we can dedicate some people to do traffic enforcement. I think it's important. It might take a little while, though.
Mr. Keel, did you have something?
I did, Mr. Mayor. Returning briefly to the topic of recruitment that you raised, we certainly, I think, all appreciate the work the department does and want to see you fully staffed. I was reading recently some of the newspapers from our neighboring communities, and it's pretty clear that we do exponentially more to screen and evaluate officers before we hire them than our neighboring communities do. Are we in the sweet spot? Are we an impediment to filling the jobs? How's your comfort level with the process we use now?
I'm very comfortable with it. I think you have to be very thorough in your vetting of police officers. We hold a certain amount of trust in the community. We give them guns and say, go forth and enforce the law. And I think it's important to make sure that we vet as much as possible. I would not want to shrink that vetting process at all. I think it's very important we do a thorough background check. We do a thorough evaluation to see what kind of person they are, if they have the temperament for a police officer. Because once we get them hired and they're here, we own them, and it's difficult at that point to change things. It's much easier to vet them up front. What we are trying to do is shrink the amount of time it takes to do that vetting process. We're trying to recruit seasoned officers. We're trying to make our process easier for veteran police officers to come here. I think Juneau is a great community. I think our police department has more to offer than almost any other police department, especially of its size. You have a combination of small town living and big town policing. You have opportunities there as a police officer to be a bomb technician, a SWAT operator, a hostage negotiator, a school resource officer, an investigator. You have so many opportunities as a police officer. I think people should be knocking down our doors to come here. We need to do a better job of squeezing the time it takes to do that vetting and get our message out to some of the more veteran officers. And that's kind of how we're trying to do that recruitment process.
Just in follow-up,
I want to make sure I'm not drawing an unfair inference here from the first half of your answer. Are we doing enough?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
We do everything in that vetting process that any agency does anywhere. I've never seen more done. It is, you have the written test, you have a physical test, you have an oral board interview, you have a suitability exam, you have a pre. Thank you. Then there's a background check. We have an investigator go through your entire background check. They have a polygraph where they come in and take a lie detector test. They do a psychological evaluation with a psychiatrist. They have to do a medical evaluation. We vet people, and it's an important part of the process, and we will do that.
And Mr. Keel, I would hope you wouldn't be thinking of only about us recruiting people who have said they wanted to be a police officer since they were five years old. Sometimes really good police officers are really good in whatever they're doing right now, even if that's a totally different field. So if you're looking, please give me a call.
And we are in fact testing this week. It's not too late to sign up if you'd like to.
I'm a little intimidated by Lieutenant Sell. I apologize.
Why are you laughing?
Ms. Crane, go ahead.
Just a couple of things. One, I was really pleased to see you all at the Filipino Hall and getting out in the community and trying to recruit there. And so it's good to see you out in various parts of the community. You talked about the fact that we are taking over airport security next month. Where are we with recruitment for those positions? I would hate to see people being pulled off of other assignments to have to do that. So where are we with that?
We are going to have to cover that on overtime initially, so we will not be reducing the staffing that we have dedicated to the citizens. Our officers will be covering those shifts on overtime initially, and that was part of the original plan. From the time we hire a police officer till the time they are trained and ready to go out and work is about a year. So right now we have three people that are in the hiring queue. We're testing again this week. I think we have
one in background right now.
One in background. We had six or seven that are signed up to take the test this week. I'm hopeful that our lateral entry program will bear some fruit because those people don't take nearly as long to train. It will probably be at least a year before we actually have the staff hired to be dedicated airport people. Until we get to that time when we have them hired, it will get covered by overtime. So it'll get covered by people that would not otherwise be working. We won't reduce services to the rest of the city.
And one of the strategies with that is when as people hit their retirement age, we're really hoping that we can persuade some of them to stay. I mean, we can retire at 20 years. We don't have to. So we're hoping as part of the whole constellation of problem solving to focus on retention of senior officers as well.
Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The officers who you train for the airport, are they trained in a way that they can also be community officers? I mean, it sounded like you were saying it was a little different.
No, they will be police officers. It'll be our regular officers who cover overtime at the airport. When we start hiring the new officers, we will not put a brand new officer out at the airport. They'll never learn how to be a well-rounded police officer because the airport's a very, very special assignment. So once we start getting those officers, there'll be some of our more senior officers that go over to the airport to do enforcement out there. And the new people we hire will start off working as every police officer starts off working. And then it will eventually be its own standalone squad where people would have a 1 or 2 year assignment out at the airport. So they'd work at the airport for a couple of years and come back and work patrol or work investigations. It works out very good for us because it adds another thing that a person could do over their career. It adds to the diversity of the job assignments that we have for people. So long term, I think it's great both for the airport and for JPD. Getting to where we have the people will be a challenge, though, and we'll have to overcome that challenge over the next year.
Just one more.
Go ahead, Ms. Becker.
TSA required this police supervision out at the airport. Are they helping pay for it, too?
It's... A portion of it. We have a memorandum of understanding with the airport about how we're filling these positions and what we're doing. And so there's a line item in our budget that comes from the airport. And I don't know where the airport got their money. I looked in theirs.
Alaska Airlines. Alaska Airlines pays for the biggest majority of it because that's why it's needed. Mr. Wanamaker?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. One last more of a statement, but hopefully there's a question at the end of it. When I listened to the news there about a week ago and we had the armed robbery of the coffee stand and the same person had been caught on a camera grabbing the tip jar at a local restaurant, that worried me a lot because it seemed to me that what I've heard through the years as a lay person, is that the kind of person who, because they get away with it once, thinks they can do it again, and they usually make mistakes, or the person being held up makes a mistake, and we have a tragedy on our hands. Is that type of incident increasing in our community? And I'm assuming that you're really working on this one. What can you tell me about it?
If you don't mind, Mr. Wanamaker, I'll take that question since it's under the supervision of my unit. We have arrested that young man for the tip jar theft. He's a person of interest in the coffee shop theft, but we have not confirmed that yet. That investigation is still open. It is a very disturbing type of crime. You might remember when the Girl Scout money was stolen at Fred Meyer
a couple of years ago. This is along the same lines. We almost always find a drug nexus in these cases. Someone has run out of resources. They've run out of family support. They are trying to pay for a habit often. And I'm not saying that's the particular in those cases, but that's usually how it works, is that you have someone who is really desperate, because crimes like that, they are often going to get caught because they are going to places where there are cameras, and they're making kind of a really desperate grab for money. So they are scary because those types of people can be unpredictable and they can be very dangerous. So it's part of our discussion with environmental design is we want to work with businesses on how good are your cameras. You know, we don't want it to always look like the black blob did it. And where are those cameras pointed at, and how is that really going to help us? So that's one of our partnerships with it. But we put a lot of resources into that series of crimes as soon as it happened, because we wanted to get that person before a tragedy happened associated with their desperation.
If I just make a general comment, though, about clearance rates, when people commit a crime here in Juneau, I've looked so many times, I'll get an email that's a general email to all the whole department, and it'll have a picture of someone. I'll say, who is this person? And without fail, within about 2 or 3 hours, one of the officers says, this is whoever, and we know who did it. And our clearance rates are higher than I have seen at any agency. I think that has to do with the closeness of the community. Everybody knows each other. But if you're going to commit a crime in Juneau, and we find out about it, your odds of going to jail are very, very, very high. I'm very proud of these officers and investigators and detectives. They do a great job of identifying offenders and holding them accountable for it.
So the technology is very important to us. If we have a good picture or a good video of someone, we're going to find them.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions, comments? I just have one last statement. Last month when we were out there, the city manager and I, and talking with you, I just reiterated that the safety of your officers and the certification of our department is important to me and the city manager, and I'm sure each and every one of us sitting at this table. And I know that I think we're the only certified police standard certificated department in the state, and that's something to be very proud of, and I hope that you continue to try to maintain, or that you continue to maintain that, and that if you need any help from us doing that, make sure that you tell us. And the last thing is your dispatch department. How are we doing? You said everything is fine and everything, but I know that dispatch has been shorthanded for many, many years, and that's a stress on that division and those people that work there. And so do you have a plan of attack to try to get that taken care of, and in what time frame?
We have a plan of attack. It's called Erin. I don't know if she's still here, and I embarrass her every now and again. When it was about my second day here, and I was sitting down with everyone, and she came in, and she said, and I'm going to paraphrase, hey, look, I don't care about you, Chief. I'm all about my communication center and my people that work for me, and I'm going to take care of them and make it work. And I was like, wow, you are okay. It's a constant challenge for staffing. They're still understaffed. She's been able to do a great job of recruiting, and there's a lot of people in the currently going through the – that's not mine, is it? Okay.
That beeping's making me a little uncomfortable.
There's a lot of people currently going through the hiring process in dispatch. We had a setback. We had a dispatcher who's newly hired and almost through a training, and they found another position and will be leaving us. And so it is a constant, ongoing struggle. I would say the plan is we're going to continue. I think, how many people do you have in the, where is it, how, was it 20? How many people do you currently have in your, that have applied for the open positions?
Yeah, we had 25 last time, and we're getting ready to open that up again, because as we go through that process, it takes quite a while.
And so we're actively recruiting for that, too, and she is doing better than I am at finding police officers, finding dispatchers. And so without her, it would be very scary, but she's doing a great job.
Mr. Nankervis, are you still with us?
I am. I'm just waiting my turn, Mr. Mayor. Is it my turn?
It is your turn, sir.
All right. I have some comments. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to tell the chief that his belief is correct. He has the best police department in the state of Alaska, hands down. Chris, great job with the report. Ed, the last, good luck with that pro program. I am not, repeat, not coming back to work anytime soon.
We could use it at the airport if you wanted to come back.
Not coming back anytime
full-time
soon.
Temp.
Big Dave, nice scholarly photo. I think that's appropriate. It's fitting to some achievement you've just achieved, I believe, or recently achieved, I should say. What I did notice about the annual report is it focuses a lot on the crime reports and the statistics and stuff, and everybody likes to know about all that. And I wanted to mention just a couple of names, and I know I won't hit everybody, that's behind the scenes that isn't flashy, doesn't do the headline work and stuff, but I think needs to get noted, like Kelly Ray in evidence, who's been there nearly 30 years at JPD, if not 30 this year. She's been there a long time, and everything that goes to court goes through her, and she makes sure the cops do everything right when it comes to evidence. You just don't see that in reports very often. Scott Phillip, also another 30-year employee, I believe, pretty close to 30 years with the city, the only mechanic, keeps that fleet the best fleet in the state of Alaska as well. And if you've been to Anchorage and looked at what they drive around in, you will know what I mean. Rick Smith keeps that building looking brand new, and that building is, I think, nearly 15 years old now. Looks great. Dee Ojard, who also is quality control and lets the officers pull out the information that they put into the computer and makes sense out of what goes in. And Brandon Holloway, who makes the computers work all the time. And again, thanks to everybody down there that is doing what they're doing so that we, the regular people, the rest of the population, don't have to do that. We very much appreciate what you guys do and gals do, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Mr. Nan Curvis, and you're not a regular person yet. Chief, go ahead.
This was the first annual report we've done since I've been here. I was asking you if there's something, additional information or a different format or anything that you would like in our next annual report. Are there things that you would like to see us present to you or any additional information you would like to have as we go forward?
Anything from the assembly? I think we'd like to see your two areas filled up for sure, dispatch and patrol officers for sure.
We're actively working on that.
Us too, Mayor.
Mr. Nan Curvis, were you trying to say something again?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was just going to say every year that I look at that, I think it needs bigger font.
Bigger font. We're taking a note right now.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. And thanks for your staff here. All right. We'll move on to assembly reports. And for the mayor's report, I just wanted to report on my trip to Sitka. I went over on the ferry, went to Angoon and to Sitka, and talked with the people in both communities, short meetings in Angoon while the ferry was in. 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Holy smoke. but
that was
in Sitka,
we had
a good meeting with the MTAB board and the Sitka mayor and community development department and their economic development department and their chamber. And they, again, appreciated somebody from Juneau taking and being a participant and listening to their thoughts and their concerns on especially the Alaska Marine Highway system and that. So, you know, we talked about this last year during our goal setting, how important it was to try to begin to get around. And now I've made it to two places. I was supposed to go to Huna and Pelican also the day before, but due to my own family crises, I didn't make it on that one. I can see for sure that it's important that we do that. If an opportunity comes up that any of you see to go and participate with another town within Southeast Region, be sure you let me know, and we'll see if we can make arrangements for you as an assembly person to go and to meet with their either assembly members or their mayors. It's very important that we do this, and it's already benefiting us for sure. So Sitka was a good trip. On Sunday, some of us went and saw the new Q400 Bombardier, one of three that is going on to Anchorage and will fly between Anchorage and Fairbanks and Anchorage and Kodiak. Horizon Air, the little company of Alaska Airlines, is bringing them into service up there. And they had one here on Sunday. We were able to go out and tour it and look at it. And it's a pretty neat little airplane for sure. 76 passengers, and it'll be interesting to see how they cram Alaskans in it up north during the winter and all their heavy parka and bunny boots and everything else.
And loading from outside right. In Fairbanks at 40 below.
and they're trying to work on that. That might not happen, Ms. Crane. They're looking at ways to try to solve that problem for sure. Wow. But in the old days, we used to do that. So got to toughen up. Anyway, the Q400 is in service out there, and it's a neat airplane, Bombardier. Sika trip was good. And then, Mr. Smith, do you want to give an update here or wait until committee reports on the lobby stuff?
It's up to you, Mr. Mayor.
But let's wait until we get to the bottom of the committee reports and stuff. Okay, we'll move on to committee reports. And Ms. Becker, COW.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Our last COW meeting was August 26th, and we talked about the amended bear nuisance plan, and JPD showed up for that, too, and gave us some of their insight. And now we've sent it to you, and we have passed it, or we sent it to us. The Assembly has passed it, adopted it. We've worked a long time on the comprehensive plan, and on September 30th, when we have our next COW meeting, the comprehensive plan may be, it won't be, I'm sure. But the majority of the time will be spent on the comprehensive plan, we hope. Thank you.
Ms. Crane, Finance, announcement.
We have a Finance Committee meeting this Wednesday night, and packets were passed out before the meeting, so you should have your agenda and attached information.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met just before this evening's Assembly meeting, and we heard a presentation by the Sister Cities Committee, which recommended that the City of Borough of Juneau enter into a sister cities relationship with Calibo in the Philippines, which is the capital of the Aklan province. We were joined by a number of members of Juneau's Filipino community, including the Honorary Consul from the Republic of the Philippines to the State of Alaska. And the HRC recommended that we do that by way of a motion to the Law Department to draft a resolution to that effect. So that will be coming to the full Assembly, although it is not before us this evening.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Mr. Jones? I'm sorry, Mr. Nankervis doesn't have one. Mr. Smith, Chair of Lands.
No Lands report.
Okay. And we'll come back to you in a minute. Mr. Wanamaker, Public Works?
No Public Works report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Smith, you want to give us a report on the lobbying efforts committee?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The committee charged with the lobbyist selection process and solicitation of applicants met for the second time. This morning, the committee is comprised of myself, Mr. Keel, and Mr. Wanamaker, and this morning's meeting was attended by Mr. Jones and also the city manager. We confirmed the publication dates in the Empire and online for the solicitation. And the objectives in this process were to create an open and transparent process of solicitation so we'd have a maximum number of individuals participating. As I think we suggested to the Assembly in our first meeting, we were looking for no more than 12 applicants, and we received 11 in total. The committee budgeted about 3 hours for this initial review. We are recommending five applicants or firms to the assembly, and others may certainly be added by the assembly if we decide to add to this number of five. They are, in alphabetical order, the Anderson Group, Bob Evans, Hickey and Associates, Kevin Jardell, and Sam Keto III. The committee is recommending an interview format as follows: a 30-minute total segment for each person or company, with 15 minutes allocated to four questions, which will be provided the day of the interview to those that are being interviewed, and then 15 minutes for assembly questions, and then approximately 5 minutes for a wrap-up by the applicant. And then we look to have a brief break between the interviews. The manager is currently has polled the assembly. We now have a tentative meeting date of September the 21st from 2 to 5 p.m. And we have all in attendance except Mr. Dibdahl, and we're not sure about Jerry Van Curvis, if he can attend. Is he still on the line?
Mr. Nan Curvis?
Yeah, I'm still here. What was that date again?
September the 21st, a Saturday, 2 to 5 p.m.
I will be back in town.
All right.
That's our report.
And you'll be available to be at that meeting then?
I should, unless something comes up that I don't know about right now.
Thank you, Mr. Nan Curvis. Mr. Jones?
I was trying to remember, and I didn't bring my notes, but I wasn't aware that it was the Anderson Group. I thought it was Hopkins Hayes Group.
No.
No? Wrong. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Does anybody have any feedback to the five that we have?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Go ahead, Mr. Ann Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to thank the committee for doing that. Obviously, I was out of town for all this, but I appreciate all the hard work they put into it and whittling it down to a manageable number that we can deal with. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nan Curvis. And so we will be lined up to meet on the 21st. It's a Saturday in the afternoon, and we'll interview these five. Does that meet everybody's approval?
That'll be an executive session, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Since there's no objections, that's our path and our course, and I want to thank the committee also for the hard work that they put into this. Another thing that will be getting accomplished. Okay. Liaison reports. Mr. Jones?
Thank you. JADC's next meeting is Wednesday of this week, so I don't have a report. Docks and Harbors, we dealt with the two contracts on the agenda tonight. The only other piece of information I would pass on is that the 16B bids are out for proposals, and the bid opening date is October 22nd.
Big changes in the next 3 years down there, isn't it? That'll be interesting. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Nan Curvis, do you have any liaison reports for us?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. No, I do not. I've been out of town for the last meetings. I can say that there is an airport board meeting scheduled for this Wednesday at 6 p.m., same time as our finance committee meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nan Curvis. Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Planning Commission will meet tomorrow evening, first the Committee of the Whole, and then a regularly scheduled meeting.
Thank you. Mr. Dibdahl?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Crane?
Nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Keel?
Nothing tonight. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Nothing tonight. Thank you.
Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I attended the Chamber Board, and they approved their CEO, Kathy Romick, appointment to the U.S. Chamber Committee of 100. And hopefully all of you saw the article that recognized her new position. She was above the fold. Very important. So they're very proud, and it's going to be important, and it's going to be a good thing for Juneau to have her there. Well, for Alaska, but first one ever.
to be from Alaska, so that was good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Becker. Presiding officer reports. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's two appeals out, presiding officer on the Bryan appeal and Cavaganero appeal. We've had the preliminary pre-hearing meeting. We've set the dates, and the O'Brien appeal is going to be at 5 p.m. October 30th. That's a Wednesday. We picked that simply because we thought maybe they would both be on the same agenda and couldn't find another meeting. But because of some other changes, we'll only do the O'Brien appeal. It should only take about less than an hour to do that one. The Cavaganero appeal has been set for 5:30 p.m. November 25th. That's prior to an assembly meeting. And they wanted some additional time, and so we're allowing 30 minutes each side for that particular hearing. So we're in the process of the record's been done. The first set of on O'Brien, the first request for additions to the record are in, and the amended motion will go tomorrow. The Cavaganero appeal, the first motion isn't due until October 20th, I think, due to the attorney being out of town and moving offices or something. So that's my report on those two particular appeals.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. And we don't have any other appeals, right? Thank goodness right now. Okay, assembly comments and questions. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to have each person on the assembly take one of these. Okay, I have one. I guess I should have one, too. Thank you. Thank you. This, we have a request from Coogan Construction to buy sand from the Lemon Creek pit at $2.02 a ton, and they would like it to be under the same conditions as we did. We approved the first one. This is for their continuation and completion of the Island Hills Apartments at 401 Cordova Street. They want 5,000 to 10,000 tons. And this will finish up the project. The terms, basically, one of the most, I consider one of the most important considerations is they will be, it's a formula of how many tons they have equals how many units that they put at a lower rate. And this is in keeping with our providing affordable housing, which is why we approved it the first time and why we're requesting that it be approved again. It will finish the project. It is the same project, and it's going into the same place, so it's just a continuation. It's sort of like adding on to a bid. At any rate, I'll just go ahead and make a motion, and then I'm sure there'll be questions. I move that we accept the request from Coogan Construction to purchase from 5,000 to 10,000 tons of sand under the conditions outlined in the agreement draft 3 that you have in front of you. And I ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, I don't have an objection to it, but I do have a question about process. This is the type of thing where in years past we normally have a staff recommendation, a staff analysis, and a recommendation after a review by the Lands Committee, and I was wondering what process have we followed for this, and what is the staff observation and analysis on this one? Thank you.
Ms. Kiefer?
You're correct. We would like it to go through the Lands Committee. The last time this went through, it did not go through the Lands Committee, so we're following the same process that the last agreement was approved. This is timely, given that we are now in September, and they'd like to try and get the material sooner rather than later, and the timing to get it to the Lands Committee and then to the Assembly doesn't bring it into the Assembly until mid-October.
Thank you. Mr. Wanamaker, go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Thank you, Madam Manager. I appreciate what this is for, and I do not object to it, but I do want to emphasize the importance of us following the process so that these things receive a proper review and that we really are acting in the public interest. I think it's bad policy to set a precedent where the Assembly makes decisions without having a review prior to a decision. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Does staff want to say anything else about this? Okay. Ms. Becker, anything else?
No, thank you.
Questions? Mr. Smith first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I heard reference to a continuance and that this proposal is in concert with what we've done previously. I just like affirmation of that again, that this is a continuance of the same process, and we're in the same parameters were approved previously.
Correct.
Thank you.
Ms. Crane?
First, I'd like to say I agree with Mr. Wanamaker's comments, and then I have a question. The agreement that we have in front of us, it says draft 3. Is this the same agreement as in the past? Who prepared this agreement? Was this a CBJ-prepared agreement? And are there any differences here from the previous one?
Ms. Becker?
Pardon me. I would like to have Mr. Cheney answer those questions because he's been working on the draft language.
Mr. Cheney?
Yes. This is a tough one, I would say, because the issue of selling sand and gravel at a lower rate to specific projects is a very broad topic. There's lots of interested parties. But this particular project has... is a continuance of a previous one. A new phase is being built, and Mr. Coogan asked me what the current numbers were because we had done this under a previous, dollars per ton. All of those costs have gone up, both private sector and our administrative costs. So I have provided him with the new dollar amounts, and he basically drafted this document, but it is very much almost word for word what we have. I have not taken this to law. It's his draft 3, so I would just say that I have been providing him information, but I did not draft this document.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I need to differ with the city manager. The first recommendation, first iteration of this did in fact go through the Lands Committee. I sat on the Lands Committee at the time, and the Lands Committee recommended a similar arrangement to the Assembly. And so I have no problem with the concept. I share Mr. Wanamaker's concern about process, and I know the current makeup of the Lands Committee has looked at this once and is looking for a more comprehensive policy. And so I'm a little nervous about rolling forward tonight. It would help me to have a couple of detail questions. As I understand it, then the first looks like, I apologize, I'm just reading here as we go here. There are 4 units renting now, and 24 units are partially through construction. The sand and gravel we're discussing tonight would be for a subsequent phase, not the first 28 units. Is that correct?
Well, as I understand it, the first phase was for 24 units, but the way that the agreement is set up, it's for 24 units rental months. So it's either 24 units for a year, or it's 12 units for 2 years at the rate of $1,200 a month. So this is taking that same formula, 24 units for a year, or however it's prorated, and they are saying 35 tons per unit month is the new formula that Mr. Coogan is proposing, which is generally similar to what we did before. But before, it wasn't spelled out. It wasn't the details were just that we were going to sell them at a lower rate. So that actually led to a misunderstanding. We thought it was going to be about 5,000 tons and ended up being over 10,000. So this agreement has a cap of 10,000 tons. So it's a little tighter agreement than the previous one.
I think there was more information in there than I asked for, so I just want to make sure.
No,
I'm good. I'm good because I'm spinning a little bit here.
Okay.
You described the prior agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That gravel's done in those units that were subject to that prior agreement. Those are don't need any more gravel. Is that correct?
Correct. That building
we're looking
is
at the next building.
Framed up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was the first one, and then how. And you may have said it a minute ago, how many unit months in the first agreement, the first phase that has passed now?
Okay.
The prior one?
24 units for a year, or 12 units for 2 years.
Okay.
Unit months. Okay. So that's what was the first agreement, and that's what this agreement is mirroring.
Two gross of unit months. I got that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A question for the attorney, just because we have this draft agreement in front of us. I just because I don't do contracts myself. Somewhere in here, I saw it say that this agreement will continue in effect if the project is sold or moved on, and then it says not assignable. Are those in conflict legally, or do those work well together?
Can you point to specifically?
Section 10 says this agreement's not assignable. I got to go back and find the one that says. Here it is. It's the last sentence of Section 5. Buyer's obligations under this agreement shall survive any change of ownership or management.
I've never seen this before, so if you just give me a moment.
I think Mr. Cheney has a comment while you're looking.
Mr. Cheney, go ahead.
My comment on that is, obviously, this has not been reviewed by law. It's quite clear. And I was thinking that if this was approved tonight, it would be approved with the provision that it be the provisions be approved by law. This is a draft. This is not a final document.
Mr. Gill?
If that's agreeable to the maker of the motion, I can live with moving forward here tonight. In at least the understanding on my part that we're not going to do this again until we have a policy that covers them, or I wouldn't support doing it again until we had a policy.
Thank you, Mr. Keough. Madam Becker, do you agree with
that
laws are
go to law?
Go to law.
I'm quite sure that would happen no matter whether I agreed or not, but I definitely do. Okay. Yeah, and I can add that easily to my motion.
That's what we want.
Okay. Yes. I agree.
Okay. All right. Does everybody understand where we're at then? Is there any objections to moving this forward to law and then it's approved? If there's no objections from the law department. Okay. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Assembly comments and questions. Anything else, Ms. Becker?
No. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Wanamaker.
Nothing tonight, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Keel.
Nothing, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Frank.
I just have a question about, we all received, while Mr. Cheney is here, we all received a letter from the Russian Orthodox Church about what we could do to help in that situation with reduced permitting costs, et cetera. And I'm wondering what the next step is in consideration of the request that they've made of us.
Mr. Cheney?
I believe that would be a good item to go to the Lands Committee.
could, because I would like to see that request followed up on.
Okay, we'll move that to the Lands Committee, and they can look at it and follow up on it for us as the Assembly of the Whole. Mr. Dibdo.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dibdo. Mr. Smith?
Just a comment, Mr. Mayor, as the Assembly looks at going to Southeast Conference here in the next 10 days, I wonder if there might be an opportunity to, for those of you that are more involved with Southeast Conference, to give us a real brief overview, your thoughts about some of the priority items that we'd be looking at as a group in that meeting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You want that tonight?
Not necessarily. No.
Okay. Yeah, I can, and then I'll send you the agenda and everything. You've got a current agenda? Okay. Yeah. I'll talk with you. Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have just a couple of things real quick. One is under the consent agenda for bid number 14-025, which was the biosolid disposal award. So $1.6 million encumbrance says the increase will be funded the first year of the contract through the wastewater fund balance. It is anticipated the future year's expenses will be funded by a rate increase. I would like to see a memo from the Public Works Director with an estimate of what the, well, a range actually would be good for what is anticipated to be the rate increase. I would also like to see in that memo something that lists the difference between this current contract, the cost difference between this current contract and the previous contract. So that was the only thing on the agenda. And the other thing I wanted to mention real quick, I'm sorry I'm playing music with chairs and I missed the opportunity to sit in session with Mr. Dibdahl.
He missed it too. Mr. Edgar. Thank you very much. And we are going to have an update on where we're at with waste management and aero services and the whole waste thing because of this contract now of us spending $1.5 million on our sludge. And see where that's really going again. And I think staff has been looking at it very seriously and will come up with some options for us. And are you going to do that through COW or are you going to go to Public Works or Lands with it?
Our intent was to take it to Public Works facilities
okay.
First.
Good. We'll start down at the committee level. And Mr. Wanamaker, you'll get that.
I will.
Again, it's important for us now to reevaluate where we're at with all of that because if we're spending $1.5 million just on our sludge, and maybe it's time to look at where we were a number of years ago and what our best putting forward is on this whole topic of waste management.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I think it also lends itself to the discussion about how we're going to proceed forward with our biosolids and what we want to do about how we deal with them from here on out, whether we do the burning, the incineration, or any of that other sort of stuff. I think we need to have that discussion that looks long-term. Thank you.
Yep, that's exactly what we're going to do, Mr. Nankervis. You're right on. Thank you. Where was I at?
You're basically
you're at adjournment.
Executive session or none, and then there's adjournment.
There's no. Mr. Jones.
Just one comment. The Juneau World Affairs Council is annually does a forum, and the forum this year is October 17th, 18th, and 19th. You put on your calendar, and it's basically about Canada. So it's in conjunction with the University of Alaska Southeast. There'll be both professors from the university in Vancouver and around, but also some joint presentations between UAS and the university in Whitehorse. There will also be have been invited and accepted some officials from the government of the Yukon Territory as well as Whitehorse in town for that. Fuller agenda will be probably on the JWAC website, but I think it would be of interest to us, both since Whitehorse is a sister city and also our interest, and I believe when you were in Skagway and Haines, there was somebody from Whitehorse either on the phone or came down. But I know that our calendars fill up relatively quickly, but it is a The 17th is an evening session. The 18th is an all day, including the evening at Egan. And the Saturday is also a full day. In the evening, there will also be a reception that the University of Alaska Southeast is hosting from 5 to 6 just before the evening at Egan. So if you could put that on your calendar, look at the JWAC, I think it would be of great interest to us as a municipality.
Can you say the dates again?
October 17th, 18th, and 19th. And the 17th is an evening session. 18th and 19th are full days, Saturday and, or Friday and Saturday. There's about, I believe, ten speakers coming to town to talk about that. Won't be as full and not changing subjects every 15 minutes like Southeast Conference agenda. But
not doing that this year.
The agenda for Southeast Conference is every 15 minutes it changes a topic. So.
Yep. Okay. Anything else? Thank you all very much for this evening. And Madam Manager, do you have anything else?
Just a reminder that there's the 9/11 Memorial at Riverside Rotary Park Wednesday at 9:40. Be there early because parking is always difficult.
And I get to ride in the boat, so come on out. See us in the boat. Assembly's adjourned. Thank you.